Pseudopod number 5, September 29th, 2006. Today's story, Sacred Skin by Michael Stone. Good evening and welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast magazine. That's right, we're weekly now. I'm your host, Merle Lafferty, co-editor of Pseudopod, along with Ben Phillips. We strive to bring you the best in horror audio. Like our sister podcast, Escape Pod, we are paying market, supported by the donations of our listeners. You can visit our site to comment or donate at pseudopod.org. Our story this week is Sacred Skin by Michael Stone. Sacred Skin was first published at bloodlust-uk.com. Mr. Stone has been published in Dread, Space Squid, Robots in Time, Butcher Shop Quartet, and Dark Jesters, to name a few. Mr. Stone lives in the United Kingdom. The story is read for us by Paul S. Jenkins of the Rev Up Review. So be assured that I have nothing up my sleeve, because I've got a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
Sacred Skin by Michael Stone. Hodges's gaze rested on a box at Ryder's feet. It was the size of a man's head. They had sat facing each other at the fireside for nearly an hour while waiting for the Earl. Yet she had made no effort to explain what the box contained, and Hodges was too much of a gentleman to ask. Occasionally he would catch a whiff of something rotten. She crossed her ankles, and he averted his gaze as a lacy hem flashed beneath her skirt. The light was fading, the small talk petering out. To stymie Derith Ryder's growing impatience, Hodges fished a deck of cards from his waistcoat pocket. "Sit back, miss, and take a card. No, don't let me see it. Memorize it. That's it. Now place it back in the pack. Anywhere, it doesn't matter." Simon Hodges grinned as he scooped up the playing cards and cut them using only the fingers of his left hand. He shuffled them one-handed and finished his display of dexterity with a flourish, flicking the cards in a blurred arc to settle in his right palm. "Keep thinking about your card. Here it comes. There." A single card jutted from the pack. "Your card, miss?" Ryder picked it up and laughed, her green eyes sparkling in the firelight. "The Queen of Hearts. Yes, I'm impressed, Simon." A blush warmed his cheeks. "I learned to do magic after I lost the proper use of my right hand. I was flying on a night raid over Dresden, when up popped a Fritz in a Messerschmitt Bf 110, raking our fuselage. We dropped our cash and limped home. Our tail gunner was killed, so I suppose I got off lightly." Hodges gripped the chair arm with the fingers of his right hand. "There's no real strength on this side from the shoulder down. I took up magic to train my left hand to be as good as my right." Derith's lips formed a cautionary moo. "They are merely tricks, Simon, not magic." Hodges blushed again. "Right you are, miss. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to sound uppity, and call me Derith, please." The bedroom was darkening by the minute, the setting sun painting the walls a deep sullen red. The mullion and transom cast a crucifix on the four-poster bed. Shadows pooled on the aged floorboards. Outside, at long last, they heard a car approaching up the gravelled drive. Hodges stood and moved to the window. It was his master in his new Rolls-Royce Silver Ghost. Bumbling cockchafers, their copper-hued carapaces glinting like rubies, bounced off the windscreen. The Earl, in his tweed three-piece and dark tan brogues, stamped into his bedroom.
"So, it's to be tonight, is it?"
"Yes, it is, Lord Heatherstone," Derith said, handing the parcel to the Earl. She addressed the Earl correctly, but her tone was far from obsequious. This troubled Hodges. His master prized his status above most things. Hodges said a silent prayer that she would not be over-familiar. He cleared his throat. "I have told the rest of your staff that we are not to be disturbed, sir."
"Very well, Hodges. Close the door."
Heatherstone placed the parcel on his desk and tugged on the twine that bound it. It slithered loose, allowing the stiff paper to spring open. He waved his liver-spotted hands at the foul smell.
"Take over, Hodges."
Hodges stepped forward and removed two plugged jars and what appeared to be a collection of small animal skins from the parcel. He gingerly carried the crinkled mass to the bed, where he unfolded it to its full length. It was a patchwork of uncured pelts. Hodges smoothed it out with the flat of his hand and felt a lurch in the pit of his stomach to find it human-shaped. Ryder said, "Your sacred skin, my lord." Heatherstone's nose wrinkled in disgust. From the corner of his eye, Hodges saw Ryder's cheeks dimple in mischievous pleasure.
"What are the meaning of these?"
Heatherstone ran a pink fingertip over the archaic symbols that flowed over the skin. Branded runes, inked lines, and engraved script swirled and combined in complicated patterns. Ryder moved between the two men. "The Lord's Prayer is branded over the breast, my lord. And here you see it is repeated in Latin. These," she indicated a script inked on the left arm and shoulder, "these are sacred Hebrew texts from the phylacteries, and the Muslim throne verse, the Ayat al-Kursi, is branded down here on the legs." Heatherstone pointed at the right arm.
"And this?"
"That is Sanskrit, my lord. It..."
"And that?"
Hodges interjected. "If I may say so, sir, that looks like a Tau, a symbol originating from Egypt and the Middle East that guards against..."
"Yes, yes, I get the bloody picture."
Heatherstone worked loose the knot in his tie. "No need to show off. Miss Ryder, you've clearly worked very hard, I approve." Hodges expected Ryder to bask in the Earl's rare praise, but the mystic merely gave a curt nod and politely faced away as Hodges helped his master undress. Hodges's eye was drawn back to the bizarre ensemble on the bed. Besides the dangling crescents, silver wheels and rosary beads were the crushed eggshells, mashed leaves, animal bones and seashells crammed into the seams. Fancy feathers jutted at odd angles. As a loyal manservant, Hodges was privy to many of his master's secrets. He was, in a manner of speaking, invisible, but this strange suit was something of which he knew little. He pushed the matter from his mind and concentrated on shaking the creases from his shirt. His mother, a chambermaid to the current Earl's father, had instructed him that in service one was not paid to opine, but to do. That, in Hodges' experience, was easier said than done. Gossip was rife among the staff of the manor. Since his father's death, the Earl of Heatherstone had taken to awaking in the small hours of the morning and demanding his servants dress and feed him before leaving the house on a nocturnal jaunt. He would return home in the grey light of dawn, dirty and dishevelled, with a ravaged cast to his eye. Hodges had once observed a smear of blood glistening on the Earl's high forehead, but dared not mention it. His master was always unapproachable on these occasions, insisting on bathing himself and given to snapping at any intrusion on his privacy. Someone had cut the horses several months ago, their beautifully groomed flanks crisscrossed with wicked slashes from a craft knife. A police inquiry, solicited by the farrier, had drawn a blank, namely because none of the house staff would voice their suspicions. No one wanted to lose their job, and the Earl's influence spread far and wide in these parts. The previous winter, the Earl had invited a priest to the manor to conduct an exorcism. Bells and candles, prayers and chants, the shutting and barring of windows. It had been like something out of the Middle Ages and ill-suited to the modern day. The servants had been terribly unsettled. The ritual must have failed, for the Earl recalled the priest who had performed the ceremony. Hodges was not privy to their conversation, but he was on chauffeur duty that bright spring day the Earl wanted driving 50 miles to a village in Shropshire. Hodges had hoped they could tarry a while in Shrewsbury. He found the wide river and overhanging willows soothing. But the Earl was disinclined to stop. The Rolls halted outside a whitewashed cottage at the end of a narrow dirt track. Black windows peered from under thatch. Hodges stayed in the car as Heatherstone strolled up the path to the front door. The garden was well kept and redolent with lavender, rosemary and chives. Uniform rows of vegetables and canes stood proud, flanked by a hedgerow that rustled crisply in the breeze. Dead leaves crunched underfoot. Hodges cringed and glanced away as the imperious Earl rapped his walking cane on the door. When he looked again, it was to see Heatherstone being ushered inside and the door closing behind him. Later, he awoke to a knocking on the driver's window. He sat up and squinted bleary-eyed as an attractive woman beckoned him to wind down the window. Complying, he was rewarded with the cloying smell of honey. She offered him a plate of sugary cakes and a glass of ginger ale. "Hello, I'm Dareth. You must be Hodges, although I'm sure you have a first name as well. Your boss is having a lie down in my kitchen." Her eyes twinkled as though she was sharing a joke. "I thought you might like to take a look around my garden with me. Seems a shame to sit in that stuffy car all day." After he removed his cap and coat, he linked her arm, and she led him round the back of her cottage. The air was alive with the contented buzz of bees. Four hives like exotic pagodas stood under cherry blossoms. Bright sunshine filtered pink by the flowers. Ryder told him about the bees, the queen, the drone, and the worker, and how the bees produced different flavours depending on which flowers they visited. She pointed out the plants in her wild garden, explaining the medicinal uses of yarrow, St. John's wort, and house leeks. She listened as he told her round a mouthful of cake how the war had left him unfit for manual labour, and, seeing as his left-handed writing was illegible, the future had looked uncertain. Then he had contacted his late mother's employer to be pleasantly surprised to find the current occupant of Heatherstone Manor wanted him. Hodges related with some pride that he was now the youngest personal manservant ever employed by an Earl of Heatherstone. Ryder touched his damaged shoulder with a concerned frown. Hodges's palms were sweating and his mouth was dry. He had known love before, so he was able to recognise the symptoms, but the sudden onset left him shy and embarrassed. The spell was only broken when he glanced through the open doorway of Ryder's kitchen and saw something spread out across the heavy oak table. It was Lord Heatherstone. All his body, but for his sweat-slicked, beetroot-red face, was encased in a solidified shroud of plaster. From that day to this, 36, he'd counted, Dereth Ryder had played the leading role in Simon Hodges's erotic reveries. Stripped to his underwear, Heatherstone crawled onto the bed. Ryder said, "I'm afraid you will need to remove everything, my lord. If you'd rather I left..." "Damn and blast, isn't a gentleman afforded any dignity in these matters?" He slid his silk shorts down over his blotchy white thighs and kicked them across the floor. Hodges stooped to pick them up. "Leave them, damn it. Come and help me pull this bloody thing on." Hodges, aware that Heatherstone was dangerously humiliated, hastened to his master's side. He lifted the skin and gestured for Heatherstone to sit down on the edge of the bed. He looked to Ryder for help. She laid the skin along the floor at Heatherstone's feet so that it resembled the old man's shadow. Lifting Heatherstone's left foot, she looped the ankle of the skin over it. "It's like a bloody French letter, it'll be inside out." Hodges blushed at the Earl's casual reference to preventatives. Dereth explained, "The skin works by augmenting your own natural protection, my lord. The protective charms and verses have to be against your skin to work." Hodges threaded the other foot into the skin and eased it up over Heatherstone's shins. It was a tight fit. Hodges was surprised at his master's tolerance. He bore the scratches from the rough seams, bones and shells without complaint. This man threw a tantrum if his bathwater was 1 degree above his preferred temperature, or the butler arrived a minute late with his pudding. No one had ever accused Lord Heatherstone of bearing discomfort stoically. When the skin reached halfway up his thighs, Heatherstone stood and tugged it over his privates. He sat down again gingerly to allow Hodges to thread his arms through and fasten the skin at the back with laces of black sinew. Hodges began to tighten the straps at the ankles, working quickly in the dim light. Lord Heatherstone plucked in delicately at the crotch. "Is my lord all right?" asked Ryder. "Not really. Why should I be defending myself against something that could be repelled by the Ayat al-Kursi? The phylacteries?" "Yes, those. The creature will be a creation of a belief system. The belief system may be a valid one to you, or it may not be. But what matters is that some people believe the creature exists. What you believe is irrelevant. The creature is a construct of belief, and will behave as it is believed to behave. Ergo, the creature will believe itself unable to penetrate the holy texts and charms present in the sacred skin." "Creature?" Hodges sought invisibility. Once the skin was secured at the ankles, wrists and neck, Hodges bid his master to lie back. Heatherstone stiffly acquiesced. Ryder unplugged one of the two jars that came with the skin and passed it to Hodges. It contained a thick, black ointment that smelled strongly of honey, of lavender, and of barely glimpsed herbs on a spring day. Heatherstone glowered. "What in the blue blazes are you thinking about, Hodges?" Hodges felt his cheeks burn. I do apologise, sir. I was just waiting Miss Ryder's instructions." "Get on with it. We haven't all day." Ryder pushed her fingers into the ooze and liberally spread it over the seams of the sacred skin. The stuff quickly hardened when exposed to the air, forming an effective seal. Hodges smeared the cuffs at wrists, ankles and neck. He dabbed it between each toe and finger and under the nails. Ryder finger-painted an ancient design on the Earl's head. She paused and explained to the Earl that next they had to stopper his nose, ears and eyes with the preparation. Heatherstone would need to breathe through his mouth. As Hodges took a large dollop of the ointment and pushed it into his master's ears and nostrils, he saw Heatherstone's florid complexion turn ashen. His chest rose and fell rapidly, the thin, dry pelts creaking. "Sir, I'm going to seal your eyes now." Hodges could scarcely believe what he was doing. The Earl's voice was unnaturally loud and toneless. "You have been a good servant, my boy. A loyal one, and a good... well, whatever. I just wanted you to know that, Simon."
Hodges blinked. "Simon?"
Ryder interrupted his thoughts with cool fingers on his wrist. "My lord, I have to tell you about this." She held up the other jar. She tipped it up, and a rubbery, off-white piece of root fell into her palm. Making sure she had the old man's attention, Ryder enunciated clearly. "You have to chew on this. It won't taste very nice, but you must under no circumstances spit it out. The creature cannot penetrate the sacred skin, and the black ointment will protect the thin membranes on your face, hands and feet, as well as your ears, nose and eyes. This root, when chewed, will prevent the creature from passing through your mouth. Once it has turned to a mash, slip it under your tongue." Heatherstone nodded and closed his eyes. Hodges wiped the last residue of the black preparation over the eyelids, sealing them tight. Tenderly, like a mother bird feeding a chick, and thankful that the Earl couldn't see his hand shaking, he took up the fragment of root and dropped it into his master's mouth. Heatherstone coughed and spluttered. His saliva turned vivid purple and frothed over his chin. Hodges wiped his fingers clean on a handkerchief and let out a deep breath. He patted the Earl on the shoulder, the simple show of solidarity, which Heatherstone would never have permitted under normal circumstances, left him feeling strangely treacherous. "Sir," he said loudly, "do you wish me to stay or check on you later?" Heatherstone made a sideways chop with his hand. "No." Ryder patted Hodges's arm. Leading him away from the bed, she whispered, "I wish to stay. Actually, I didn't intend to leave, in case he chokes." Hodges quietly drew a heavy drape across one half of the window, shutting out the feeble light of a sucked rib moon. As he moved to the second drape, Hodges saw Ryder's reflection in the glass. Doubt clouded her fine features. She had wanted to be left alone, he was sure of it. He snatched the drape closed and turned to face her. "Yes," she said, "he could choke, I suppose. The root will have a paralyzing effect on him. His face will be numb already, and when it gets into his bloodstream, he will be completely immobilized."
You never said anything about that. Is there anything else I should know?"
"Please, Simon, don't be angry with me. The Earl asked me not to say anything to anybody. I had to respect his wishes." He looked at the frail figure stretched out on the bed. The skin was ugly, obscene. Yes, he can be very persuasive when he wants to be. They lowered themselves into the armchairs by the fireside and made themselves comfortable. Hodges tried gamely to make quiet conversation, but it was hard work. The talk of night creatures and possession had left him chilled and vulnerable. He did not believe in such fantasies, and as he recalled the evening's progress, it became less and less real and more like a fever dream. What was there to protect Miss Ryder and himself if there really were such beings abroad? He found himself starting at shadows cast by the guttering of the fire. He threw another log on, to keep it burning evenly. Dareth spoke suddenly. "Did I tell you where I got those pelts to make the skin?" She didn't need to. He knew the pelts came from the desiccated corpses of weasels, stoats, and moles that fluttered from the barbed wire fences of the Earl of Heatherstone's estate. He wondered what her point was. He said, "He has his gamekeeper setting leg traps and snares all over the place. It's not pretty, I know, but he's a countryman. His father was a keen hunter. So if it moves, shoot it, club it, or chase it into the ground and set your hounds on it. That's what being a countryman is all about, is it?" There was no rancour in her voice, but Hodges felt as though he was being challenged. She said, "Are you aware of any of your employer's other peccadilloes?" Hodges experienced a chill. What had his master told her? Since the first attacks on the horses, sheep on the hills had been mauled and lambs ripped limb from limb. Someone had put fox terriers in with a local farmer's newborn piglets. But most alarming of all, a young boy had recently gone missing from an outlying village. No one had vocalized their concerns, but unease was becoming almost tangible on the Heatherstone estate. Hodges looked at Ryder, gauging how much she knew. His ruminations were interrupted by a drawn-out, anxious squeal. It was not a noise that Hodges would have associated with a human throat. It came from the bed. Lord Heatherstone's head was tipped back, his spine arched like a bow. Within two strides, Hodges was at his master's side and forcing his fingers into the Earl's mouth. He could feel the hard, knotted clump of root wedged in the throat. Dereth's hand clapped down on his. He looked up into eyes alive with fear. "What the hell are you doing? Don't meddle with things you don't understand." "But he's choking, can't you see? Move your hand." "He is not choking, it's the creature. It's trying to escape." As she spoke, a rune flared at the Earl's shoulder. The old man's body began to vibrate like a jar full of angry wasps. Acrid smoke rose from between his toes. The design smeared on his forehead crackled. His heels drummed on the bed. Hodges fell back. "Escape? What do you mean, escape? Let me see your hands." "Not until you tell me..." "Show me your hands, damn it." Her eyes were wide. Hodges showed his empty palms. His left forefinger was stained purple from contact with the Earl's mouth. Dereth sagged. "Dear God, that was close. I'm sorry, Simon." Hodges gazed down on Heatherstone, who had fallen deadly quiet. "It is too late for him," she said sadly. "Please, let me explain. Simon?" She took his arm, dragged him away. Hodges slumped on the edge of his chair, looking at the embers in the grate, his mind searching for normality. He made a mental note to tell the chambermaid to empty the ashpan before retiring for the night. Dereth sighed. "When Lord Heatherstone came to me, he was already a doomed man. The creature is not seeking a way in, it is seeking a way out. He was already possessed." He felt dull and stupid. "Of course, that's why you wanted the inscriptions on the inside. I never thought to question that." "Listen to me, it's in there. The creature is caged within the sacred skin. It will perish in a few hours. It's a family curse, Simon. When a creature takes over, it does so to feed off the host's emotions. Its ways are subtle. In Lord Heatherstone, it was able to sate its lust for blood sports and cruelty. Heatherstone was not aware for a long time of his actions being guided, but they were. Its thoughts and his became entwined, do you see? But as the Earl became old and infirm, the creature became restless. It was goading him to excessive... Why would it allow him to put the sacred skin on? It's all about control. It guided him. But it could not force him any more than... She waved a hand in the air, seeking a metaphor. Then sexual desire can force a man to sate his lust on a woman. Although that lust will need to find some outlet. Hodges could not meet her eyes. It wanted a new body, youthful, powerful, and full of desires. But it can only dispossess Lord Heatherstone when he dies. Lord Heatherstone wanted to die wearing the sacred skin, because he knew the creature would possess the next in line, and the cycle continue. Dereth flicked a stray hair off her face. Her breathing had quickened. So you deliberately set out to kill the Earl? No, he knew what he was doing. He didn't want the creature to pass on to any of his children. He has spent the latter years of his life despising his father for being too weak to do what he did tonight. Hodges laughed, pitying. Children, oh dear, miss, I think you've been sadly misled. You see, Lady Heatherstone passed away childless. Dereth looked weary. I think the expression is grabbing a bit of petticoat under the stairs. You mean he... with a maid? That's what he told me, yes. She reached behind her neck and undid a clasp on a chain. A key dangled from it. He asked me to give you this. Hodges took the key, warm from contact with her breast. It was the key to a desk. I'm not sure I understand. Ryder sighed. My payment is in a desk drawer, the Earl said, and something for you. I've told you all I know, Simon. What about the police? Dereth smiled uneasily. I thought maybe I'd remove the skin and destroy it. Wash the Earl down, flush his mouth out, put him to bed as normal, and let you find him dead in the morning. He was an old man. Hodges picked up a poker and stabbed the husk of a log. It crumbled into black shards, sending a shower of sparks up the chimney. All right, Dereth, he breathed. We'll do as you say. But I shall remove the skin and destroy it, not you. She made as if to touch him, but Hodges moved away. He went back to stirring the fire. From the corner of his eye, he saw her settle back into her chair, scrutinizing him. Stuck-up little trollop. But, he realized, a stuck-up trollop beholden to him. His for the taking. The sacred skin was irrefutable evidence. One phone call to the police, and she would hang. Hodges imagined the hemp noose around that graceful neck, the knot cutting into the delicate flesh behind the left ear. If the rope was too long, she would be decapitated. Too short, and it would take several agonized minutes for her miserable life to end. Hodges's mouth watered. He fancied the latter, imagining her kicking at the air in vain. It was a shame that executions were no longer public. Hodges felt the heat of the fire on his face. We used to burn witches. Before he turned her in, he would have his own sport. He thrust the poker deeper into the hot embers, mesmerized by the bright coals and the smell of cinders. As he leaned forward, he felt a deck of playing cards dig into his side. Nestling next to it, in his waistcoat pocket, there by sleight of hand, was the half-chewed, purple remains of a poisonous root.
Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 2.5 license. This means you can scare as many friends as you like with it, just don't change it and don't sell it. Our music is by permission of Anders Manga at andersmanga.com. Next week, we bring you a story by Paul E. Martins about what could happen to the indebted in the future. Till then, remember that as Mason Cooley once said, lovers always believe one another's sleight of hand tricks.